Welcome to What Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Jason.
Hello.
And Swara.
Hello.
And this week we are talking about the Oscars, or more specifically, we are talking about Oscar bait and what it is and how it impacts just kind of like the filmmaking industry at large. And a conversation around award shows, which I feel like we do almost every award season. But before we get into that, what have you all been enjoying this week?
I earlier today just got back from seeing the movie The Annihilation of Fish, which is a 1999 James Earl Jones movie that basically came out in festivals that year and then never, like, was not released after until a month or two ago, when it, like, got a whole big restoration by the director. And especially now that after James Earl Jones died a few months ago, it's been playing in theaters and in select locations, and it's available on Blu-ray. And more than anything, this is my shout out just to, you know, repertory theaters and independent movie theaters, and the fact that you should always try to, you know, support them if you have them nearby you or when you're traveling and have the opportunity. I was just in Arizona the other week and got to hang out at a cool little independent theater in Tucson called The Loft. It was a great time. Just love going to an independent theater and love that they get to show these kind of things. And they do, like, the one near here shows, like, anytime there's big restorations in 4K for movies, they'll show them. And they do lots of great programming at all of these kind of places that aren't just the what's playing in theaters everywhere. So
yeah,
that's a lot of fun.
I was just gonna say we have the Hollywood Theater here in Portland, and I need to just get a membership there because that's like all they do is like restorations, special runs, like things that you haven't seen. And I'm like, it's right there. I should make more of an effort.
Yeah, there's really only one in the DC area, and it's in Silver Spring, which is not DC. It's Maryland, and it's not really easy to get to.
I live there, and
I go there often. I love it, but like, I wish there was more than one. And but if I lived over there, I would have a membership, no doubt, because it's great to be able to see movies the way they were intended to be seen on a big screen.
Definitely, yeah. Also, I really like I think every region has what you just did of like, people say that this is my city. This is not my city. This is the outskirts or a different place entirely.
Nobody, for me, it's nobody Beaverton. Mistakes, nobody mistakes Silver Spring for DC. It is
except people who live there.
Well, it's just over the border. But like,
okay,
in the DC area, you either live in Maryland, DC or Virginia, and nobody's confusing it for each other because you need a passport to get between one and the other in most people's minds.
Gotcha. What about you, Swara? What have you been into?
So on Monday, I was able to get an early screening of Mickey 17, Bong Joon-ho's latest film, which is based on the novel Mickey 7 by Edward Ashton. And this film stars Robert Pattinson, Naomi Aki, Steven Yeun, Toni Collette, and Mark Ruffalo, among others. It is so good. It is, you know, just Bong Joon-ho doing his thing, critiquing capitalism, like bashing oligarchs, and really just reminding us of what should matter most should be each other. And it's an excellent film. Highly recommend it. And quite funny as well. And a lot more emotional overall than I thought it would be initially, you know, from the trailers. And again, Robert Pattinson is just acting his ass off like he usually does. Just, he's amazing. And the whole film is amazing. You go see Mickey 17. But something else I'm watching that just came out today on Hulu, I've been waiting for this series for months. Since I heard about it months ago. Delhi Boys, which is a comedy series created by Pakistani-American writer, director Abdullah Saeed. And it stars Asif Ali, Sagar Sheikh, Purna Jagannathan, Alfie Fuller, Brian George. It is just hilarious. It is so fucking funny. It's about these Pakistani-American brothers who are the sons of a basically a deli store tycoon who recently passes away, and then it turns out that their dad has like a criminal empire that they need to now take control of, and the antics are hilarious. It is very deeply cultural. Like, they are very staunchly Pakistani and Muslim, and it is, again, just like hilarious. It is so gratifying to see brown Muslim folks portrayed as criminals in such a hilarious way, you know, outside that the stereotype. Well, yeah. Yeah. And it's, I'm yeah. for, I'm,
it's,
yeah.
well, it, what's funny is I literally, just the other day I was talking with somebody, and half of my text conversation with this person is us just pitching each other story premises. And the one that I sent them earlier this week was, you inherit your family's business only to find out that it's a crime front and that you had no idea.
This is exactly what,
so hearing that someone did it, I'm like, oh, cool. The work's been done. I can just go watch it now and enjoy it. Yeah. So I'm definitely going to go check that out after this recording, because that sounds fantastic.
And it's so funny. I'm like, I can't talk about it without spoiling certain things. And I'm four episodes into it. I think there's like 9 or 10 episodes. And I really hope a lot of people see it. I already hope it gets a season 2. And yeah, it's just so good. And the cast is fantastic.
Yeah. Nice. I think for me, so one, we, Swara and I talked about this before recording, but I'm back into Balatro, which I told myself I wasn't going to do. But I put it on my iPad and was like, yeah, no, I'm still into this. So I've been playing a lot of Balatro. And then my other thing is this album that just came out called Meet Me After Practice by Boys Go to Jupiter. They're a Brooklyn-based like indie pop band with a pretty heavy disco influence. And it's just really good, fun music. The song Tilt-A-Whirl and the song Virginia are probably highlight tracks off of the album for me. But if you want, yeah, just some like dancey, indie, whatever. And if you don't despise disco, definitely check this one out. But yeah, so with that being said, thank you for the recommendations. I always appreciate it. I feel like this is where I like learn about things that I have not been checking out and that I need to check out. But where can people find you online?
You can look at my my pictures of Arizona on Instagram, I suppose, at flatter_you. I don't post on Twitter anymore. I still have an account. And I don't use Blue Sky because they don't let you have an underscore in your username. So sorry, no business.
And that's really a sticking point for you.
Yeah. I made an account, but I'll never use it. It's just,
that's fair.
It's just, yeah. it's not you. Yeah.
Not going to work if it's not. Yeah, it's not me. So sorry.
That's fair. What about you, Swara?
I am on, and I use Blue Sky at spidersuarez.bsky.social. Yeah, I'm a freelance writer for But Why Though, New Era, Nerds of Color, other websites. And I also host a podcast called The Middle Geeks, where we cover everything in SWANA representation. So check us out.
All right. And you can find me on Blue Sky at Most Always Alex and basically nowhere else. But I'm there. I'm trying to be more active on it. So yeah, come say hi. And with that, we can get onto the show. Oscar bait was kind of the thing that specifically intrigued me. Honestly, didn't pay a lot of attention to the Oscars this year. Was there anything that was like, that's the Oscar bait this year?
I mean, Anora, for sure. Okay. Anora and Emilia Perez, which, you know, has its own fair bit of controversies.
Oh, yeah,
it was Ricardo who reviewed it for But Why Though. He gave it a 1 out of 10. And, you know,
and that's generous.
And that's generous. And I'll get into it later, but I will say, like, Emilia Perez is very indicative of a certain type of Oscar bait that the Academy is very into. I'll just leave it there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. We'll get into what Oscar bait is and isn't. I'm curious whether to consider Anora true Oscar bait, given the way that it is a fully independent movie versus and doesn't follow some of the same tropes that I think we'll get into. But it, like, it premiered at Cannes, where it won the Palme d'Or, and, like, you know, that's certainly a part of the traditional track towards Oscar recognition, if not necessarily the more or less sweep that it had this year.
Definitely.
I think I'm Still Here is also a great example of the, again, Oscar bait, maybe not necessarily the right word, because as an international film, are the people looking who are making this looking at the Oscars as the thing they're trying to achieve?
Oh, yeah.
Maybe, maybe not. But it is very much in the canon of the types of movies that get recognized by the Oscars. If only the biggest difference being that it's an actress-led movie instead of an actor-led movie, as many of the traditional Oscar movies tend to be. But yeah, I paid a lot of attention because I always do. But I say this every year when we're talking about the Oscars. Like, to me, when I go to my Oscars party, it is a celebration of a year of enjoying film with the friends that I'm at my Oscars party with, more than it is about the specific movies that are in the Oscars, because as I'm sure we'll get into, like, the Oscars are not necessarily representative of the entire year's worth of film that we enjoy. I will say at the top that I was expecting to be way more upset by the results than I ended up being. I was actually less upset by the results this year, I think, than many of the past several years since the Everything Everywhere All at Once year. And so at least there was that. things didn't necessarily go poorly. As the Oscars unto themselves.
Yeah. And yeah, so I guess if we want to lay out some definitions, because I tried to read up on this, and then I tried to see like lists of things that were considered Oscar bait, and there's generally some consensus, but then I saw like, and tell me how this hits you guys, I saw at least two articles that listed Cats as Oscar bait, and I don't know that that fits what I think of as Oscar bait.
It absolutely was. It's Tom Hooper. Yeah. Tom Hooper. You know, since he directed Les Miserables, which, you know, was back in like 2016, 2017, and it, you know, there's the only thing I really like from Les Miserables is Anne Hathaway. And I think that her, but even that performance, that was an Oscar bait performance. This was like, I am playing Fantine, the most miserable, oppressed woman in this situation.
Gonna shave my head on camera.
Gonna look like I'm getting my teeth pulled out and cry and like just everything. It's just like, so the thing is with Tom Hooper specifically, you know, he had directed The King's Speech, which, you know, won a bunch of Oscars and sort of catapulted.
Also came up on list of Oscar bait movies. And I was like, was it? Cause it, I thought that was, I mean, and we'll get into whether or not being Oscar bait means you're a bad movie, because I don't think that's always true.
Yeah, no, of course
many
not.
Of them are good.
Yeah, yeah. But they do have a very specific artsy-fartsy way of approaching their filmmaking. And with Les Miserables specifically, it was like Tom Hooper was like, I'm a serious director. I'm going to take this musical and make it all live sung, which was a terrible decision by most.
I was fascinated to watch it, if I'm being honest.
Sure, totally.
Where I was
like,
I don't know that I agree with this, but I will see how it goes.
Right, right.
Look, and Les Mis crawled so that Wicked could fly, let's be real.
But it is Oscar bait. It is still Oscar bait.
Yeah. So, like, to me, and I'm curious if you have, like, specific definitions you found from the internet, but to me, the first and foremost thing when we want to throw around the term Oscar bait, and this applies to the Cats example, but like, it's about the intent first, because Oscar bait means that you are throwing out bait to try to court the Oscars. And I think often we're misusing it in the public, the general lexicon, as like movies that are within a broader category of Oscar awarded movies, but Oscar bait movies specifically are when the people making it are like, we are striving for the Oscar. We are going to cast the biggest Oscar contenders we can. We're going to put as much corporate money behind campaigning for this not only movie to be successful in the box office, but also successful in the awards season as we can. And like those are the three pieces of it that I think come first.
Definitely.
Even before the what is the movie and
what is the movie
and what are its components, because I think those all matter too. But like, you gotta start with the intent.
Yeah, and you actually hit on something really specific. So, I mean, yeah, first and foremost, these are movies that were made with the intention of getting an Oscar. Now, who had that intention? Was it an actor taking a role because they thought it would get them an Oscar, a director, a studio, like putting a bunch of money behind a project? Like, all of those are factors. But also how a movie comes out, and that's where it gets into like what you're talking about with the choices, the corporate money. The Deer Hunter 1978 laid a lot of the groundwork for this. One thing I learned very quickly on Wikipedia is that the term Oscar bait has been around since like the 40s. We have
nice.
Apparently we have been salty about this for a while, but The Deer Hunter specifically was released right at the end of the year to be eligible and screened to Oscar voters heavily. Like, that's the areas where they were buying up screens to show this movie. And that actually is kind of what set the model for how to market an Oscar bait movie, of like, you do it right at the last second before it gets to major markets, and you try to gear it as much toward, or gear your release towards the people who will be voting, because you want it fresh in their minds when they go to vote. Right. Content wise, it is a lot of like historic or period drama, war movies, biopics, generally sad or dramatic. And my theory on that is because it's easier to identify when someone's doing a good job acting when it's an extreme emotion that they're putting out there.
And I think it's important to distinguish, you know, well-received films, whether they, a lot of, like all the examples I'm listing were either nominated for Oscars or won Oscars. You know, I'm thinking of my favorite two films is Greta Gerwig, that only real ones I've watched, which are Little Women and Barbie. I genuinely think she and her team made those films with a genuine love of filmmaking and wanting to tell a specific story. You know, with Little Women particularly, it's because she loves Little Women. It's because she wanted to retell Louisa May Alcott's story with the true quintessential ending that Louisa May Alcott would have wanted. And you could see that in the love of the filmmaking itself. And just so happened that these are excellent performances with excellent actors, great set design. Like, Little Woman is, Greta Gerwig's Little Woman is such a great film just to watch. And, you know, it's there's a reason it's a timeless story, you know, since it was first written, why there have been so many adaptations of it. Then with Barbie, you know, you get the huge property and Greta Gerwig genuinely wanted to say something. And honestly, I'm sure she may have been disappointed at not getting the best director nod, but I'm sure she wasn't making that much of a hullabaloo of it as so many people on the internet were, and treating it as though it was the worst thing that was happening that year, while, you know, a genocide is taking place, you know, with our tax dollars, and looking at that discrepancy. But no, for Barbie, it was literally just because she loves filmmaking. It's because, like, she loved the story she was making in that. And then Everything Everywhere All at Once, you know, the Daniels, they want to tell a specific story, specifically Daniel Kwan as the Chinese American of the duo, wanting to tell a story relating to that immigrant experience. And having the icon of Michelle Yeoh, you know, giving her something that meant a lot to her, where she could fully display the range of her acting capabilities. And it's such a weird ass movie, you know, from start to finish. I don't think
it didn't feel like the movie was trying to win anything. It was just trying to do its thing really, really hard. Which is interesting, because we were talking, I mean, like Jason was saying, of like, there's all of this effort and intention put into these movies. And so it is kind of hard having to parse out what is a high effort movie and what is a, I guess, a try hard movie is the way I would phrase it. Like, what
Tom
is going
Hooper
after?
Movies,
like,
yes.
Yeah. Because there is a little bit of like similarity to it, but it always boils down to intention.
Like, a really interesting example is Maestro. Bradley Cooper wants an Oscar so badly. So clear from the way he talks about it, from the way he does his press, and from the fact that he, you know, has come close but not quite a few times now. I genuinely believe that he made that movie out of a deep passion for the subject, for the character, for the art of conducting, etc., for who Leonard Bernstein it was to him and to culture. So it's like it's a tough one to me of like, you can be making genuine art while also like really wanting to win awards for it. But I also like, as we're talking about like the Everything Everywhere All at Once example, that's a movie that obviously the people that made it had no like, you know, we're setting out to win every Oscar under the sun. Like that would, if they had that intention, like good for them, because it's not clearly was like not it's on not the actual yeah. plate oh, yeah. from the beginning. This, you know,
thank God it wasn't.
Yes. And also like, I think the studios behind these movies is a huge part of the Oscar bait of it all or not. A24 is who distributed Everything Everywhere All at Once. They famously, like, they are actively trying to win awards. They've been good at it, but their strategy for award winning doesn't necessarily align with the typical Oscar bait playbook.
Yeah.
At least all of the time. If they did, Sing Sing would have gotten a real wide release and we would have all been in love with it this year. But like Apple,
yep.
this year, Blitz was their big push. Mm. And I do not think that Steve McQueen, the director of that movie, set out to make an Oscar bait movie. I think he genuinely like had a story that he believed in and thought was interesting and had a really great take on it, had a really innovative style for how this movie was made. But it also, like, because it contains all of the elements of a classic Oscar bait type movie, when Apple bought it, they see this is a World War II drama. It's got, you know, it's got X, Y, and Z of these elements that have often won awards in the past. So let's release it at the end of the year when everything's award season, and let's focus on let's push Saoirse Ronan as best supporting actress for this year. Let's push this movie as an awards contender. It didn't work out for them. The movie maybe didn't live up to the level it needed to win all the awards that they hoped it would, but like a clear attempt, not necessarily by the creatives behind the movie, but by the studio that was backing it to turn it into what could be classified as Oscar bait. And so just generally like an interesting divide between the creator's intent versus the distributor's intent. And can you do both? Can you want to win awards while also creating real art?
That's a good question.
Like, it's a hard question.
What percentage of your motivation is getting that award? And what, you know, and how much of it is like, no, I have a story that I want to tell. If I get awards for it, cool. Like, that's fine, but that's not why I'm here. And, you know, a lot of this is also hard to judge because none of us are in the heads of all of the people making these movies. I feel like there's, you know, even an argument of there could be times where a movie itself, not inherently Oscar bait, that actor taking that role, definitely them trying to get an Oscar. And so it is a nebulous thing.
A complete unknown. I don't know if when they set out to make the movie necessarily was the whole movie seen as this is going to be Oscar bait, but Timothée Chalamet absolutely took that role as an Oscar bait opportunity. Didn't pan out for him, but like when he gave his speech at the Screen Actors Guild Awards when he won Best Actor, he straight up said, I want to win awards. Thank you for awarding me. I did my best in this role specifically because I want to be one of the greatest actors of all time. I think I already am. And honestly, like, good for him for just being clear about his intentions. Like, that's...
I just, when he does get the Oscar, I want him to spike it and scream, I'm the best at acting.
And I'm like, I, for one, am glad he didn't win, not just because I didn't think it was the best performance of the year, but also because, like, I want him to still have that thing to keep chasing, you know? I want him to keep making
that's
good
true.
Art
we should
because
DiCaprio
he hasn't
him.
Won. Yeah, you know, he's already in the DiCaprio lane and he's not going to win an Oscar for, like, six more years at least.
You can't say I want awards into the mic because now the industry is going to keep you hungry.
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, I think a lot of people were actually like appreciated the honesty of it, the way he delivered it.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
You know, maybe thank goodness he's a man and has a silly little mustache, so that probably bought him some points, but like it's I don't know. To like Oscar bait doesn't bother me as a concept, I think is what I'm getting at the most here. Like,
but like we want good Oscar bait.
Right. Like I want you to also care about what you're making, and I want your studio, or I want your financial backers to back the right horses.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that made me laugh in researching this is I came across, and this is like very, very early in looking into this. There was a study, I think in like 2014, trying to like nail down what is Oscar bait. What is the most Oscar bait movie? What is the least Oscar bait movie? I've heard of the least Oscar bait movie. I have not heard of the most Oscar bait movie. And I thought that was interesting because it flopped that hard in what it was trying to do. And that was a movie called Come See the Paradise.
Oh, I never heard of it.
It is it's a World War II movie starring, I think, Dennis Quaid. That's the normal one. Starring one of the Quaids. And he plays an American man whose Japanese wife and child are interned during World War II. And it's just, apparently it was like, it went so hard at being Oscar bait that like everyone wrote it off. And when these academics were like trying to like quantify and figure it out, they were like, yeah, this is it. This is the peak. We are trying to win an Oscar that has ever been made.
That's interesting.
And then the one that was like the least Oscar bait was like When a Stranger Calls or something. Oh, it was like a horror movie from the mid 2000s.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think ultimately the question that I have to go to with all of this of like, this movie was clearly trying to win, that one wasn't, is also like, what do you get from winning other than literally an award on your shelf? Like, what's, you know, the draw here? And obviously, like for studios, there's some prestige. There is some like industry credit, like where you can say like, hey, we did this one. Do you want to back our next one? It wasn't the same thing, but Todd Brown, when he directed Dracula, basically got a blank check from MGM for his next movie. They were like, Dracula ruled, do whatever you want. Like, we will make something for you. So there is something to like, successful movies get you more opportunities. You get to slap like featuring Academy Award winner on your movies.
Yeah, it's how
right, like Love Hurts.
And again, it's how Tom Hooper was able to make Cats after Les Miserables, and he won, or after The King's Speech, he was able to make Les Miserables and Cats after that, increasingly degrading in quality. It definitely works, you know, for specific actors, directors, writers, to have that award to point to get more opportunities, to have more say in what their next projects will be, and definitely gives them more of that navigability. As for the studios themselves, the Oscars, you know, despite the Oscars often showcasing films that barely any Americans have seen, and the highest successful films that they've seen, often franchise films, aren't as nominated, at least not as nominated in the major categories, Americans still tune in to the Oscars, like in the droves of millions. It's one of the most watched nights. You know, you're just watching all of these celebrities they love watching and films and TV and you know, just be all together in their fancy gowns and suits and whatnot, and some musical performances. There's still like a lot in Oscars night that Americans want to watch, you know, and I guess like this is them seeing these awards presented and seeing who wins, that ultimately is a boost in publicity for them. I'm sure like more people are going to check out Anora, The Brutalist. What was that film that Kieran Culkin won for?
A Real Pain.
A Real Pain. Yeah. With Jesse Eisenberg. Thank you, Jason. Or Flow, you know, by the way, this is where the Oscars can be really good. Like Flow, an independent, I believe Latvian animated film, one. And you know, I love The Wild Robot. Wild Robot was probably my favorite film of the year, but that's still from a major studio, DreamWorks. And so I was so glad to see Flow win above DreamWorks and also above Disney, even though I enjoyed Inside Out too. It certainly wasn't the best animated film of the year. But also
not the top five either.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But it also goes to show like how we need more categories for animated films in general, because you can't simply lump them all into one like category. And yeah. So, but anyway, I'm just real glad to see Flow win, and hopefully that'll boost its numbers. It's now streaming on Max if yeah. you want to watch it there. So yeah, like there's a lot of good that can come out of the Oscars in terms of publicity. And yeah.
Yeah. I think just the idea of like the, whether or not you like the Oscars or the Academy or the voting process, this is something that is not culturally relevant, but culturally ingrained. Mm. It is just a fact. Like there are people who their only metric of if a movie is not good or bad, but just like something that's like, oh, I should pay attention, is was it nominated for an Oscar? And there, like, there's nothing wrong with that. Nobody has time to be plugged into everything, and there's a million movies coming out all the time. But yeah, like there is some benefit to it from a publicity standpoint. It's not just about the industry benefits. Like it is very much a, oh, and now people will watch this. Now people will, you know, at the very least Google it and, you know, get it up in the search results. And that's it's nothing
least,
to be overlooked.
I'm just going to be getting text messages from everyone I know saying, what is this Anora movie? And then I have to like pretend that I don't hate it so that people will watch it, because they
should.
It reminds
me, do you remember when, I think it was Bon Iver won like Artist of the Year or something at the Grammys, and then all of Twitter was just like, who the hell is Bon Iver? Who, like, what is this? I don't know this. No one knew what the name was. And it was, yeah, that's what you get, is you get people who are like, Jason knows about this, I'm going to text him.
My mom's
yeah,
like, what's
so
Anora? I'm like, a movie that I'll never watch with you.
Yeah, it's like, you can skip it. Just, it. Yes, it won awards. Up to you.
Oh, I just mean in the way that
you just don't want to watch it ever.
I just
again.
Won't watch it with you, because okay. we can't watch this movie together.
that's fair, yeah. I guess with that, with talking about movies that were Oscar baity but won, the other thing that I kind of my research led me to was movies that won but that are like maybe not necessarily bad. So there was The King's Speech, got Best Picture. Theory of Everything got Best Lead Actor, which I don't know what your feelings are on either. Like, interrupt me with what you think of any of these movies. The Danish Girl got Best Supporting Actress, which I feel like of the awards that it was nominated for, that's the one that was maybe okay for it to get. And then The Blind Side got Lead Actress. That movie shouldn't have got
nope.
anything.
Yeah.
And then Crash got Best Editing, Screenplay, and Picture. And that is a decision that I think it's generally understood was a mistake.
Or
Bohemian Rhapsody and its editing award.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it won for editing? I feel like bad editing is like the one thing I know about that movie, and I haven't seen it.
I think it won either way. The nomination.
It was at least
at
nominated.
Yeah.
Or that's how I feel about Elvis. I always call Elvis a 3-hour long PowerPoint slide.
Yeah, I watched Elvis, and it did just feel sloppy to me. And it was like trying to go through so many things so fast, and I just, that one didn't work for me. But he got the voice down, and that's what impressed people.
I don't get Austin Butler.
Same. Yeah. But yeah, so like knowing that those are some of the things that have won, like, I think that we can safely say that like some of those are bad.
Mm-hmm.
Blindside, not something that I would have given an award to. Crash, no.
Yeah.
But others of those are, and I mean, even Danish Girl also has its own issues.
But there's a common thread among all of these.
Yep.
By the way, about The Blindside, truly fuck that movie, especially as it came out, I think, last year, that the family in real life like had treated.
Oh, it was terrible.
A supposedly adopted son. No, he was in a conservatorship, an abusive conservatorship, and they completely whitewashed, you know, what actually happened to him, and just, you know, it's white saviorism on steroids. And the common thread, the Blind Side, The Help, Emilia Perez, Green Book, and other films that the Oscar voting body, and thing you need to know about the Oscar voting body is it remains, despite some efforts in recent years to make it more diverse, it remains majority white and male. I believe it was in 2012 when it was like 96% white and male. Now it's like maybe 33% woman, maybe 10, 20% people of color. I could have that last metric off, but still very much a group of like mostly white men wanting to think of themselves as progressive, you know, as we all know, like there is that smug sense of liberalism in a lot of Hollywood that, you know, is not, likes to pat themselves on the back for thinking that they're diverse or thinking that they care about marginalized communities when they don't anywhere near as much as they should. So they'll pick these specific films that may have people of color, may have women, women of color, et cetera, or marginalized communities, trans women, particularly in The Danish Girl, and they'll think, oh, because this is diverse, but not only because it's diverse, but also because this is edgy. Specifically, we saw this in the case of Emilia Perez, a film about a film which I have not watched, but I did watch one of my favorite YouTubers watch and react to it. So I have sort of seen it now. A film about a trans former Mexican drug cartel leader, which is deeply offensive to most trans and Mexican people I've come across. But Academy members love it because, oh, they think, oh, this is diverse. This is showing these marginalized communities, and it's edgy, and it's controversial, and it's willing to push the bar on things. I think there's
and
some...
it's frankly an entertaining movie if you pretend that there's no real universe. Like, I saw it in theaters. I immediately was stupefied by it. I was like, why does this exist? But also, like, I'm a human being, and I'm watching this movie, and I'm like, this is ridiculous, and I'm somewhat entertained by many aspects of it. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's... that's true of most of these movies. Like, I've not seen The Help or The Green Book. I've seen Driving Miss Daisy, though. And, like, you know, a lot of these kind of movies often are technically interesting or technically good. And so it makes it even easier for people who are of that, you know, older white male demographic that overwhelms the Oscars voting body to, like, to be caught, to be brought in by the part of it that's like, this is an entertaining movie, or this is a technically well-made movie, and be like, oh, and look, here's the progressivism of it. So, like, I'm it works for me.
When, and like, bonus points if it's written in a way that lets them center their feelings.
Yes,
you know,
exactly.
Exactly.
And it's just so, it's deeply frustrating. You know, I think, like, the only film in recent memory for me that really, like, you know, fully centered that brown or immigrant experience was Everything Everywhere All at Once, where it did sweep in its categories, and it was great to see, even though Angela Bassett deserved over Jamie Lee Curtis. But yeah, that's already been discussed ad nauseum now. But yeah, that film, you know, it's just, it was just so bold in its storytelling. It remains bold in many ways. And we just need more of that. We just need more of, like, marginalized creators being able to tell, like, their own stories, you know, in general. But also, you know, people who, even people from none of those communities who tell the stories of those communities, to be able to work with those communities to uplift them in such a way. And arguably, you saw that with the winner of Best International Documentary, which was No Other Land, which is an incredible win, like, historic in so many ways. So yeah, it's like, there is definitely progress being made, but it is still frustratingly slow. And again, when you have, like, something like the debacle of Emilia Perez, like, not just because of the substance of the film, but because its star, Carla Sofia Gascon, I forget her last name, but turns out, like, she's virulently racist and Islamophobic and had all of these tweets, and that, like, definitely staved, that probably lost her Best Actress, truly.
Or I mean, it at probably least lost the movie every award that it didn't win.
Exactly. And Zoe Saldana still won. And the thing is, like, she still probably only won. I'm not only one. She still probably gave the best performance of the film, at least what I saw. But she had been in the industry for decades at this point. And it's just like they decided, oh, we'll finally give it to you, you know, for this being the best part of this crappy movie.
This is the Oscar bait problem of the minute that movie premiered, Netflix said Zoe Saldana is going to be the winner of the best supporting actress, which frankly, she's not the supporting actor of the movie. She's the lead character, but that's a whole separate issue. But like Netflix said, she is the winner. The industry said she's going to be the winner. They didn't care what other movie came out the rest of the year. Like it was just anointed from day one that this is the only performance that we're thinking about, the only movie that we're thinking about in this category. And every year there's at least one or two of these categories that are like, it doesn't matter what happens from 9 months before the ceremony, we've decided. And part of it is because like, I think often people don't know that the way that the Oscars are voted on, it's not like there's these 7,000 people that vote for every award. There's every award, aside from Best Picture, is voted on only by people who are part of that guild or that membership. Yep. So only actors are voting for actors. Only lighting people are voting for lighting. Only sound people are voting for sound. Only costume are voting for costume. Mm-hmm. And so... the way that an actor category becomes anointed 9 months before the ceremony even happens is based on the fact that for most of movie history, actors have looked a certain way. And and that there's so much movie history that there are far more older members than there are younger members. Mm. And like in a documentary category, there's a lot fewer documentarians. So there's a far fewer people who vote in that category than the acting categories. Mm-hmm. And like the documentary people have a very particular viewpoint on the way that they vote, the same way that the actors have a viewpoint on the way that they vote. And so when we're taking the Oscar bait conversation as the whole, we have to remember who actually votes for what. Like, because in every other award that gets given out the entire rest of the season, it's a lot more just if you're a member of the Screen Actors Guild, you vote in the Screen Actor Awards, but there are multiple different awards they're voting for. If you're a member of the New York Film Critics Circle, you're voting for everything. And so it's different when you get to the Oscars how that gets decided, and it shows.
I think the other thing that shows is that there's no requirement to actually have watched all of the movies. And so that point, that's also where you get recency bias and buzz. And we go back to the Deer Hunter model of like, I'm going to release this right before we're voting so that my name is at the top of mind. And like it's legitimately, it's a strategy to game the system.
Right.
I mean, same with like animated films where people are just like, oh, I don't know, my kid liked that, I think. Like, I'm not going to sit down and watch six animated movies to figure out who gets this award.
I vote in multiple awards bodies, including our annual But Why Though top movie lists. And like, it is impossible for some of these awards bodies members to actually watch everything in time because.
Yeah.
The Washington Area Film Critics Association does their voting in mid-December. Like,
that's not enough.
Truly just too early to possibly have seen everything. Yeah. But even for, Oscars people vote all the way through March. They have less of an excuse. But the way that even my own opinion changes between November when I start watching all of my screeners that I haven't seen yet until Oscars night, like, yeah, because a lot of it is the recency bias, or a lot of it is that, like, I just truly did not have the opportunity to see that one thing. And when I finally did, I was like, oh, this actually was better than everything else that I've seen. And that's not necessarily fair to the people making these movies, but it is a challenging reality of the system.
It is. Well, I guess with that, like, do you guys, as we've been exploring this, do you feel like Oscar bait is like a fair term or accusation for a movie? Or do you think it's like a little bit like you're making some assumptions about the film itself?
I think it's a fair term. I think that our general understanding of the trajectory of a film's development or how a director approaches it or any of the examples that Jason and I noted, I think it's fair to call them Oscar bait. They can be really good Oscar bait. They can be really bad Oscar bait. It's going...
That's right. So maybe it just doesn't need to be an insult.
Yeah.
There can be Oscar bait, parentheses, derogatory, but it doesn't have to be.
Yeah, it's just like the term filler. There's good filler and there's bad filler in TV series.
Right.
And
it's amoral. It's
just,
you have to use it correctly or I'm going to be skeptical of why you're using the term in the first place.
Saying something's Oscar bait because it made you think a little bit and was about something sad, not fair.
But unfortunately it does remain within a narrow scope of genre that the Academy will accept. We've talked about this before. Kate has talked about this before, how Jordan Peele's Us, despite having certainly the best actress performance of the year in Lupita Nyong'o and what she was able to do in that film, being nominated for zilch, even outside of the Oscars, as I understand it, maybe like for some horror awards. I'll have to look back and see. But yeah, Lupita gave the best performance of that year, but the Academy still wouldn't touch it because it is because of the horror genre and the unfortunate overall disdain that the Academy and other major award institutions have for taking horror seriously as an artistic form. And, you know, you also have certain sci-fi films, you have fantasy films. You know, it was really, you know, the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which is my favorite film trilogy of all time, that really pushed the bar, only got one acting nomination with Fellowship of the Ring for Ian McKellen as Gandalf when so many performances were deserving, you know, particularly Elijah Wood, Sean Astin as Sam, maybe Viggo Mortensen, definitely Ian McKellen throughout the trilogy. But, you know, it got awards and everything else just because of how technically well made the film is and how rather seriously they took Tolkien's subject matter. So all that to say is, like, there have been times when the bar has been pushed, but it's just not been pushed enough for the Academy, unfortunately, when certainly so much else is deserving, particularly like in the realm of international film and expanding categories there beyond just having an international film category. So there's still a long way to go. I do still think that there is worth in some of the Oscars, but it remains a very flawed institution that is, for better and worse, at the top of recognition in the American film industry.
Yeah.
At the same time, I'm also like, look, it's been a problem for 97 years. It's never going to change. Part of it is just that the reality of the Oscars is that it is recognizing a specific type of film and a specific form of the various crafts that are awarded as part of it. And like, look, Lord of the Rings still comes out of it all with not only a few awards here and there, but also, you know, bajillions of dollars and billions of fans who will always want to watch those movies over many of the movies that are awarded. And there are other types of awards bodies that are perhaps less prestigious than the Oscars that do award these types of films. And there are, you know, the Annies for animated movies that give out all kinds of more industry specific awards, or there are the Saturn Awards for sci-fi movies and sci-fi media and all kinds of, and the Nebula Awards for that matter. And there are all kinds of other ways that things are recognized and that work within the context of what those genres are, what those, you know, corners of the industry are, in a way that the Oscars just may never. especially because they go in waves where every few years they'll like, you know, this year we got several awards from The Substance, a horror movie if there has ever been one. And often the people that vote in the Oscars look at that and say, all right, well, we gave The Substance a bunch of recognition this year, which means next year we don't need to worry about horror movies
we did a freaky one,
right?
We're
like,
good,
we gave Everything Everywhere All at Once all the awards, so next year don't expect any sci-fi to be receiving any recognition. And like genuinely this is how people think, because like it's just natural after a certain point. You it's really hard to avoid the tendency to be like, well, you know, Demi Moore has never been recognized, and so we should recognize her now, even if this wasn't the, I mean, just as an example, I'm not saying this is true.
It was the same thing with The Revenant, you know, and Leonardo DiCaprio, right, like, where people were like, that wasn't his best.
Right, exactly. And like, it is our nature, I think, as emotional beings to sometimes put aside what is empirically perhaps the best choice for what we think is the most deserved choice. And that, whether that's right or wrong, I don't really know if it matters, because that's just, that is how the Oscars are. And I think it's better for me, I prefer to just accept that that's, like, yes, there should be changes to some of the ways the categories are run, and to make things more fair, make things more equitable, more interesting, to have the opportunity for different kinds of films to be recognized. But at a certain point, there's a scope within which the Oscars function, and we should be pushing it to function within that scope in the best way that it can.
And particularly, like, ensure that certain companies don't dominate or continue to dominate. You know, like, Disney kept winning the best animated feature award for decades, but finally the streak was broken a few years ago, partially because a lot of new Disney animated films suck, but also because independent and other studios' animations are reaching the bar in a really great way.
So, yeah, on that quick anti-Disney thing,
sure.
Watched Wild Robot the other day.
So good.
And what I realized is that my top three most interesting animated films to look at purely of the last decade were Wild Robot, Puss in Boots, The Last Wish, and Ninja Turtle, and Spider-Verse and Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, and these are all people who are trying cool new things. Mm-hmm. And then every Pixar and Disney movie just feels so sterile and so rote.
Yeah.
And I just can't get on board with what they're doing anymore when I am watching Wild Robot. And I'm like, oh, this is like a storybook. Like this, like the animation they're doing is something Disney has never even attempted.
Mm-hmm. Right. And on one hand, like all three of those movies do come from traditional studios. They, Sony, Paramount, and
studios that are actually doing something.
And DreamWorks.
New,
But they're doing things that are different than what those, like, Sony animation is a relatively new thing. Paramount's current iteration of animation is a relatively new version of that studio too. And so it's, I think part of what does give me hope for the longer term future from this Oscars is that, like, as we were saying earlier, all kinds of movies that never would have won a couple years ago did win this year. And not just because it's The Substance and its genre and it's just the genre's year, but like the fact that a little Latvian movie that has no words spoken in it won best animated feature is like, that's cool. And it's it wasn't an underdog either. Like it was a toss up between Flow and Wild Robot, but like many people fully understood that Flow might win. Like, that was just a normal feeling. No Other Land literally doesn't have distribution because everyone are cowards, and like everyone understood that this is one of the best documentaries of the year. It's not necessarily the best to everybody, but everybody who follows the documentary race is like, yeah, like this is a deserving film.
Yeah.
It's not just because it's the hot topic issue, although I'm sure that that's a piece of why it won specifically, but it's like, it also just genuinely is a great documentary. And the fact that we see independent studios like A24, like Neon, and I'm sure others that I can't think of off the top of my head, but especially those like continuing to take away some of the recognition that the big studios, the big, you know, mega conglomerate corporation studios all enjoyed for the longest of times is like, that's cool. I think that there's like, we don't want to just like say, great, thank goodness we've got Neon and A24 to steward the future of film, because obviously if we put all of our eggs in those two baskets, they will eventually turn into corporate problems too.
Oh, totally.
You know, there's already evidence of it here and there, but it's cool to be able to see that there is currently a crack in the landscape of film to have independent opportunity and be successful with it, even if it's still, you know, fewer and further between and not necessarily financially viable at the moment still. You know, some most I think Anora is like the lowest grossing best picture winner of all time, except really? For one or like or the second lowest, I mean, is some I think is what I heard, like
made around 40
because no one saw it, no one knew about it, but it's also in part because it's distributed by Neon that like is a smaller studio and has less, and it's a weird movie, but because it won, like it continues to create more opportunity for independent movies to get financial backing and for those independent studios to grow, continue to grow, and for there to maybe be more independent studios in time.
Yeah. And I think that's the frustrating function that the Oscars play for me, is helping smaller studios get their name out there so that the people who have money will give them that money. Like it is this marketing component, like to get this award or to even be nominated for this award. And so as much as I'm like, the Academy is not the tastemaker, they're not the ones who decide what is actually a good movie, but like there is a function here that we can't really avoid until we tear down the system.
Yeah. And it's so important, you know, for us, you know, as journalists, as commentators, as we often do, you know, highlight, spotlight the films, independent films that we think that we feel that people should be seeing. It just can often feel like, you know, we're like waves on the shore, you know, going in and out, like just not able to change the full structure. But I think things may slowly be starting to change. I tend to be a glass half full rather than glass half empty sort of guy. And yeah, I think this past Oscars overall left me feeling with a lot more hope for, you know, what can be recognized at a higher scale than I thought would have been before. For example, I didn't think No Other Land was going to win. I was so shocked in the best way. I was truly like so heartened and surprised. And, you know, we had an Oscar watch party and like we all cheered when it did. Animated film In the Shadow of the Cypress, an Iranian film won, which was truly incredible. My fiance is Iranian. We have a lot of Iranian friends. So seeing all of them cheer for it when it won was just so wonderful to see. But I will say that speech was awkward AF and apparently like it's a husband wife directing duo and like him just like literally taking the phone from her instead of gently scrolling back up to the top was just like, it was so awkward. Just like, sorry, that's a rant for another day. It was tough. Let's just say like,
not as tough as Adrian Brody's speech.
Oh God. Just like men in general who gave speeches, especially for the best acting categories. Oh God.
Robert Downey Jr. needed to shut up.
How did he even get on stage? I'm assuming as a presenter.
He gave out the best supporting actor, as it was the first one given out, and he just rambled on and on and on and on.
But then
it's actually all Carlos Sofia Gascon's fault. Okay. But that's a separate.
I was gonna say
point.
They could just start playing off the presenters the same way that they play off the winners.
I wish.
It's because the last year or two they've been doing this thing where they have like five legendary people who won the award come out and say a really nice thing about the nominees, and it was like pretty nice. It went on for a little while, but they couldn't do that this year because no one can say nice things about Carlos Sofia Gascon. And so instead they had one person come out and talk about the five nominees in the supporting categories and then just played clips for the for the best actor and best actress instead because they just
that feels
they couldn't
very
say
calculated.
Anything nice, and it was so ridiculous. But I mean, that's all aside the point. Yeah. I just needed to explain.
No, I'm
that.
Glad you brought that up. But I think does that do it for this week? You guys have any closing thoughts?
Just that, you know, the most important thing with all consumption of media is understand what you're consuming and understand what it means for something to be Oscar bait. Understand what makes that kind of movie and why those movies get all the recognition they get, so that we can de-emphasize some of the toxic parts of those movies while uplifting the parts of it that are creative and are inspired and are like genuinely somebody's piece of art. Be more like anybody that isn't Emilia Perez, but that's obvious.
There's still wrong answers that are not Emilia Perez.
Yeah.
But yeah. Sorry, anything you want to say before we wrap up?
Just watch more independent films in genre specifically. In fantasy, in animation you enjoy. Like, I'm looking forward to watching Flow, for example. Watch and support and be outspoken for the media that you believe needs to be recognized, that goes against the grain of what the big studios may want us to see. Even though, like, some of the studios are doing really great things, like DreamWorks and Paramount Animation and Sony Animation. I'm specifically, like, referencing Disney Animation, which has gone so down the, like, drain in quality. Support independent media always.
Like, it might definitely. A lot of independent or international film might be inaccessible in a lot of localities because you might not have a local independent theater that has a four different, you know, regional film festivals a year to show off niche Iranian movies and the year's most celebrated African films every March, like we do in DC. But like, you can look up what movies play there, and you can find them on DVD at your library. You can find them on streaming platforms. You can find them on VOD, because even if you can't see them in theaters, they do very regularly find themselves in inaccessible places eventually. And you know, because they're not often the things that are at the top of everyone's talking list, they're hard to, you wouldn't know that they exist unless you got to do a little bit of the research of like, okay, what are the things that are new right now or that aren't getting the airtime. But, you know, a couple of simple searches like that, like what played it at festivals this year, or what was trending outside of the U.S., can help find great things to watch that aren't just the ones that are the most commercially viable.
Definitely. I don't know that I have any additional thoughts beyond that. Like, just watch more stuff, watch cool stuff, watch weird stuff. The Academy can help you to find really cool things, but also there's just cool stuff out there. And we got so far away from Oscar bait, but I feel like it was a worthwhile conversation to have. I think that does it for this week. So if you at home enjoyed what you heard here, and if you want more, the good news is we have it. We got a whole website with articles, reviews, interviews, Just all kinds of pop culture stuff there. We are on Blue Sky. You can also subscribe to our newsletter and donate to the website by going to butwhythough.net/support. Everything that you give goes towards keeping the site running, goes towards us making this podcast, paying our writers, all that good stuff. So if you can send us anything at all, we would greatly appreciate it. Swara, Jason, thank you guys so much for joining me. I had fun this week. I hope you did as well. And everyone at home, we'll see you next week. Have a good one.
Take care, everyone.
Go watch The Invisible Fight, Estonia's best movie of 2023.